this is Paige Drobot wishing CKUW 95.9 FM a happy 25 years on the FM dial. Congratulations.
Welcome to Groundswell Radio on CKUW in Winnipeg. Today I wanted to present another Canadian composer portrait in our series called Canadian Music 101. The documentaries I'm presenting on Groundswell's Canadian Composers 101 series was commissioned by the Centre Discs label for an initiative called the Canadian Composer Portraits. Now, as many of you know, these documentaries highlight a generation of professional Canadian composers that were important to the development of Canadian music in the 20th century. And here is the radio documentary featuring Gilles Tremblay. Now, just a note, it was produced in 2012. Gilles Tremblay was born in 1932 and died in 2017. Here it is.
Compose is to put things together. All the events that are happening to us are pregnant of music because they have relation in time, in density. A phone call, a political event, the texture of the skin that somebody that you touch. These events are not separate one from the other. They have relation. Then the conclusion is that for the musician, everything could be transformed and perceived as music.
It's an early spring day in Montreal. There are still patches of crusty snow on the ground, but it's sunny and the birds are singing. I've come here to talk with Gilles Tremblay, the composer. He's just turned 70 and recently retired from teaching. He and his wife Jacqueline live in a fine old house in the beautiful old neighborhood of Outremont. When I arrived, Gilles greeted me at the door. Though we'd met before, I was still surprised by his youthfulness. He could easily be 20 years younger. His wife Jacqueline was there too, with their rambunctious 4-year-old granddaughter. Gilles thought the mountain a quieter place to talk, and so we came here, to a garden cemetery on the north slope of Mount Royal. We appear to be alone, except for the occasional car driving through the cemetery's winding roads. The conversation ranges through Tremblay's passions, the lessons of nature, the teachings of the ancient Greek philosopher Heraclitus, the music of Olivier Messiaen, the poetry of St. John of the Cross. Gilles Tremblay himself is above all a poet. He uses images of movement, of transformation. Gilles, where are we exactly? What is this place called?
This is the Montreal Cemetery. It's the Protestant part. And the Jewish part is just over there. And the Catholic Mystery is on the other side. But we are going to visit a friend. It's a very small brook, stream, and very musical. Because I think that water is the running water is the for me the essence of rhythm.
As we leave the road, we pass a monument to Sir Arthur William Currie, commander of the Canadian Corps in World War I. A little farther up the hill sits the gray hulk of the Molson family mausoleum.
You know that the word rhythm comes from Greek, the verb rhein, or rheo, to flow, and it gave also the name to the river, the great river, the Rhine. And the same root gave the word rhythm, to flow, and rhythm is as the same root. Some birds beginning, even with the snow, we can hear the crunching snow and the beginning of the bird songs of the spring.
We emerge from the sea of grave markers onto a grassy knoll. I hear the brook before I see it, a distant burbling. As we approach, I see the water springing out of the rock of this long-extinct volcano.
Put the mark here.
Jill's been here earlier. He's made an arrow in the snow pointing to a spot where the water flows over a pile of rounded pebbles. He encourages me to put my ear as close as possible to the water.
If you listen to the streams, the rivers, the falls, it's full of rhythm. And if you slow down these things, then you are conscious of the fantastic rhythms when it's slowed down. If you slow down two octaves, it's like many gamelans or an orchestra of tabla, of Indian tabla, making very intricate rhythms, beautiful rhythms. It's always the same and always different since the beginning of the flowing of the water to eternity. The reason why I'm so attracted by these phenomena, I think they are our real teachers and guides. You can learn from that much more than from the books, for instance. You cannot forget this lesson on variety on life and of long durations, made with very short events. I heard that there is a story about this stream, that when Jacques Cartier came, he came at the top of the mountain, and nobody knows exactly which way he took, but there is a legend who said that he followed this brook from the St. Lawrence, and he climbed here. He went here.
Cartier was searching for a passage through the continent. So what would bring him to the source of a tiny mountain brook on an island in the middle of the St. Lawrence? There's certainly no mention of the incident in the Canadian Encyclopedia. The encyclopedia does tell us that Cartier explored a somewhat larger tributary of the St. Lawrence. In 1535, he visited the mouth of the Saguenay River on the north shore of the St. Lawrence. Here he collected Algonquin and Iroquois tales of a fantastic kingdom of Saguenay. The kingdom turned out to be fantasy, and the river wouldn't be explored for another 100 years. In the first part of the 20th century, its massive energy was harnessed to power the gigantic aluminum smelter at Arvida, upstream from Chicoutimi. This is where Gilles Tremblay was born, on the 6th of September in 1932. Today, Arvida is known as Jonquière. The change suits Tremblay. The original name of his birthplace offended his poetic sensibility.
I would have liked an Indian name. And for many times I thought it was an Indian name, but it's the first letters from a great magnate of industry called Arthur Vipon Davis. So it's not poetical at all. But my father and my came from was born in, beside the Saguenay River in a small village. And my mother from the Lake St. John. And so my roots are there.
In the French language, there's a specific word for a river that runs into the sea. Fleuve. Rivières are waterways flowing into the fleuve. The fleuve Tremblay knows best is the St. Lawrence. He tries to reflect its space, its immensity, and what he calls the enthusiasm of its creator in a work he composed for large orchestra in 1976. Page of Fleuve holds three clues to the work's imagery. The first is from Psalm 97, "Let the rivers clap their hands." The second, "The rivers with their powerful noise," is from the spiritual canticles of St. John of the Cross. The third is a line from the Quebec poet Fernand Ouellette, "So the river threads the land as a tree is attuned to the air."
The symbol of water, in all religions, it has a great importance. The Jordan, the baptism of Christ, the Gange, with the purification. But purifies is a weak name for to name what I have in mind. Is to refresh, to go into the source. It's linked to life. It's linked to life, and it's linked to the sun also. You know, the main characteristic of our planet is water, and it's a universal symbol. And this fleuve teaches that it's the same water than the Nile and the Gange and the great rivers of the world, which are almost sacred also. I quoted a poem which I published with the score. It's a poem by Fernand Ouellette, the great poet.
Quand le bleu
the title is Le fleuve en arbre. de la morte glace.
Et le fleuve en arbre is an image of the network of water. You know, there's the roots, the main trunk, you know, and the branches. It's an image of the fleuve and the rivers, alors, you know, and also it's an image of the necessity of life and that how this plant is related to sun also to all the elements, water, earth, air, and fire, sun, of course.
Zay pur ton guest anaton kai air zay. The life of fire is the death of earth. And the life of air is the death of fire.
The early Greek philosopher Heraclitus believed that everything is an aspect of one thing, and that the world is made up of a balance of opposites. The four elements, water, earth, air and fire become one another in a series of transformations. The energy that drives this change is fire. Tombley sympathizes with this plan. In Jay, a work from 1981 for soprano and small ensemble, Tombley starts with Heraclitus's recitation of opposites.
And I made my own reflection about these mysterious sentences of the elements changing into the other. And finally, the reason of this movement is heat, is fire, is fire. So the link was made between, I start from this element of movement, which is fire, to take this quotation of the psalm, which is one of the psalms for the Pentecost, you know, the fire, the spirit and fire. It's a hope that this love will be a fire ascending.
Our walk through the cemetery has brought us here, to the grave of the explorer David Thompson. As we pause for a moment, I wonder about Gilles Tremblay's passions for philosophy, poetry, for Christian mysticism and nature. Where do they come from?
My father, I owe very much to him. He was in industry and in business, but he was very open to art and to philosophy because of the conditions they were living at this time. When he was 15 years old, his father died. You know, he was the oldest man in this family. There were seven, and he had to work with his mother to make a living. So they had a store, you know, a general store, and he had to leave his study at this time, but he had a great taste for the spiritual things. You know, for philosophy, for reading. He had at home Les Souvenirs Entomologiques by Henri Fabre, the great entomologist. And he had read that, all that. And I remember him waking up in the middle of the night, and he said, "You have to come with me to see some marvelous thing." And we went. We were in the country, and it was during the summer. And he wanted to show us some necrophore. These are insects, orange and dark brown, beautiful,
beautiful with geometrical design, you know. And these Necrophore, they had found a mouse. You know, they do their nest in their dead body, but they have to put it in the hurt, and they dig in a hole. But these necrophore he had found was on the rock, and it was fascinating to see how they did transport it to find some a place where there was some hurt. And he said Henri Fabre, with his experience, he never had this chance, because in Provence there was sand, you know, there was just natural hurt or sand, so it was much more easy for them. But we observed during the night, you know, with flashlight these animals, and they were doing like semaphores, you know, and it's what my explanation of my father, they were calling each other, and then many came to help, you know, transporting the animal, and they went under the animal in the direction of the hare, so that it will slip more easily. And they went on their back, and with their legs, you know, they were pulling, pushing and pulling. So that's the sense of marvel that had my father. He didn't wake up every night for that, you know. But I remember this very well. You know, we did not have a piano at home when I was young, and I discovered, I heard music before, but I had a passion for music that was had its growth around this age, 13, 14. I forgot the hours, you know. I could read the Beethoven sonata, and I found it much more interesting comparing to what we could learn in the school, you know. It was much, much more. So what I was explaining this to my teacher, said, why are you late? Did you come late? Oh, I had to read this, you know, to finish the Beethoven sonata, to read it. It was much interesting of what you were teaching. So, but they did not understand, I must say, this kind of argument.
His teachers may not have understood him, but at Collège Stanislaus, Tremblay absorbed a classical French curriculum. He then went into the Conservatoire, first at Quebec City, then in Montreal. There he studied with Germaine Malepart, Gabriel Cusson, Jean Papineau Couture, and Claude Champagne. He'd go on to win first prize in piano and study in Paris, but not before a fateful encounter with the music of the avant-garde composer Edgar Varèse.
When I first heard Varèse, it was just fascinated by that. then I learned that this man, for me, who was as important as Beethoven as in our time, was living not very far from Montreal. He was living in New York. Well, I said, there's no choice. I want to meet him. And my parents have had some friends, a philosopher and mathematician called Thomas Greenwood. He's dead now. And with his wife, they said, but we know Vahez personally very well. Next time we go in New York, if you want to come with us, we'll introduce you to Vahez. So it's how I came to see Vahez with this couple. I remember when he opened the door, you know, I was almost afraid because he looked like a devil, you know, with the hair like electricity. You know the picture. And Vahez said, if you want to meet me, can you come tomorrow morning? Come tomorrow morning and we take all the time we need. So I went back alone, and he was like a good grandfather, you know. There was a very great contrast between his rough looking, and he had a very soft voice, very, very, very pleasant voice. And then I was 19 years old, 20, I showed him a score I had made, you know. you don't have any complex at this age. And then he said, well, come with me. And we went at the piano and we sat on the side. And he said, there is a chord you put here. It was a woodwind quintet. He said, you wrote lumineux et chaud. Luminous and warm. Let's make an experiment. I think it can be more luminous and hot just if you change one note of octave. Then the same note. So we sat together, you know, because it was on a big range of the piano. And he took an F sharp and changed it from an octave, and it was a chord with almost a 12th tone. And then it was it. It was what I wanted. I never took lessons with him, but for me it was a fantastic lesson. Just this note with the same name, F sharp. You just change the octave, and then it gave a complete different color, and it was corresponding to what I felt.
The encounter with Varèse was a musical revelation. It happened at a time when Tremblay was wrestling with his faith. He'd undergone a spiritual reawakening, but he still had to confront fundamental questions about the role of the Catholic Church in Quebec.
The religion has been quite natural in our family. I think at a certain moment there is, sometime at the adolescence, the discovery of there is a kind of conversion. The word is a bit too strong. I mean, you rediscover these things at when you are you begin to be an adult, and it's very important to have a religion of an adult, not of a child. In the Quebec social background of the time, the religion was linked to power, and it's a thing that you have to think about, to criticize, and to overcome. But fortunately, I avoided certain problems. You know, many Quebecois have a terrible complex on church, which for me is very exaggerated, but you can explain it by their childhood, by the bad experience they had. But I must say that myself, I was out of it. And fortunately, when I was 22, I went to study in Europe, and then I discovered another world.
Boulez discovered the world of Olivier Messiaen, one of the most original of modern composers. Tremblay was to follow many of Messiaen's examples and would draw on many of the same sources, Gregorian chant and Oriental rhythms, Catholic mysticism, the sounds of nature, and that most mysterious sounding of instruments, the onde maltino.
I think for me at this time, what impressed me more was that Messiaen was not a composer that wanted to express himself. Comparing to many other composers, the music was more important than the self. So, in one way, it's a little like Mozart, who had sometimes very bad news and composed a joyful aria. In other time, could compose tragic music in a good part of his life. It has nothing to do. And Messiaen is the music, it's closer to the music of the cosmos, of the nature, the birds, for instance, and to life and to joy. There is a fantastic joy in the music of Messiaen, even when there is some parts that are tragic, but there is the bottom of joy is joy. And this detachment towards the circumstances, I think it was what at this time very new in music since Romanticism. And I discovered, and Messiaen helped me, he never talked about it, he had no theory, that there is something more important than his own feeling that was much more beautiful, much more interesting for everybody. Because to say that you feel bad or well doesn't interest all the world. But the fundamental joy that is in the flow of life, this, I think, can interest everybody. Besides, you know, the example of Varese, of Messiaen, I am fascinated for the phenomenon that is behind the curtain. The curtain is the sound that you hear, but behind that there is something else. It's why I use very much resonance with the sympathetic sound at the piano, you know, sympathetic resonance, we call it. And that's what is behind. And what is behind is always marvelous. It reveals the fantastic reality.
Thank you.
Gilles Tremblay's passions are hardly confined to the mysteries of sound and to the music of Varèse and Messiaen. While he was studying in France, he developed another.
But I met my wife, a passion of mine.
She also went in Paris, was studying in Paris at l'École des Beaux-Arts. She was studying fresco. And as I was in love with her, I often, after the class of Messiaen, went to meet her at the Atelier des Beaux-Arts. You know, the fresco is a very large surface. And we were working in big structures in wood. And one, I was there in an afternoon, and she had to go somewhere, and I started to move the boards on this big structure, and these boards were a little like a bow on a string instrument, but it was the structure that was sounding, and it made fantastic harmonics, and I was absolutely out of this world. And then when I came back to myself, I said, many people down there, you know, I was up near the ceiling, you know, they're very high, and I saw many people who were wondering what was happening there, you know. Somebody asked a writer, what is your secret? Is it just a piece of paper and a pencil? That's all. And I believe very much that you can stay for hours in an empty white page. So sometime before becoming crazy, then you have to do something. I use a lot of paper. Where I make some drawings, and it's spontaneous drawings, you know, zigzag and so, and represents, you know, sections, and sometimes it represents a whole piece. I think with doing some drawings very fast can give a kind of unity in the form. The fantastic thing about composition is it's an art of time. It's an art of time, but at the same time, we live in space and we grasp more the thing in space than in time. Because in time, we forget the things, you know. There is the memory, but there's also the faculty of forgetting. I think there are two kinds of composer. Whatever time they live in, there are composers that think by continuously, and people that think by blocks. Take an example, a classical example. I think Monteverdi thinks more by blocks. If you think the Vespers of the Monteverdi, of the great madrigals, there is evolution inside these blocks, but it's a block of something, then a contrast block. And so. Other composer, Palestrina, almost at the same time, he thinks more with continuity. Brahms thinks with more continuity. Ravel has a great continuity, not Debussy. Debussy is more like Monteverdi. Messiaen thinks, I think, more with blocks. I never had to choose to one side or the other. I mean, you are what you are, and you do what you can. In music, I mean, it's the way your brain is made, probably, that makes you think in one way or the other.
And which way do you think?
I think I'm more in the way of blocks. But I appreciate the subtle changing from one block to the other.
These changes can be animated by something physical, say the length of time a flute player can hold a certain pianissimo note, or the time taken by a cymbal to decay after having been struck. Or they can be provoked by the reaction of one musician to the sound of another. All these devices are at play in Le Sifflement des Vents Porteurs de l'Amour, a composition from 1971 for flute, percussion, and four microphones. The various sections are generated by a reading of passages from the poetry of St. John of the Cross. St. John's great work is The Ascent of Mount Carmel and the Dark Night of the Soul, or La Nuit Obscure. It begins with the line, "In a dark night with anxious love inflamed."
La Nuit Obscure is a, sometime in the spiritual evolution, there is a moment where people who had the kind of experience of God are like a flame. So in the La Nuit Obscure, I fell on three verses, which could have been written by a surrealistic poet. So these three verses are: Le fleuve au bruit puissant, le sifflement des vents porteurs de l'amour, le concert silencieux, la solitude sonore. I translate. The great river with the powerful noise, the whistling of the winged bearer of love, the silent concert, sonorous solitude. I had the kind of whole idea of the piece while I was walking beside the Saguenay River. It was I was on holiday with some parents there at the time, and the river was frozen, hard frozen. But there is some tide also in the Saguenay. And I was walking, and I thought I heard like a gunshot, you know, explosions. This is the ice that breaks, and there is a huge silence, a freezing silence of coldness. It was very cold, and they go, it gives me the idea of extremely violent explosion into a silent, and progressively a kind of melting process that gives birth to the melody, to the freeness of melody, to the exuberance of melody. So it goes from ice towards fire.
Thank you.
The visions of Heraclitus, of the psalmist, and of St. John of the Cross imply a certain moral viewpoint. For one thing, Tremblay is a pacifist. It's been just days since the Americans invaded Iraq. Tremblay has been thinking about this and other wars, and of a site he visited in the Alps years ago.
I was then in the region called the Vercors, where there was this, during the war, this big battle, you know, with the Maquis. And everybody went for an excursion. I like excursion, but this one, this time I wanted to stay. And I started to read this fantasy en Do mineur, C minor fantasy. It was during the war of Vietnam. I don't know if this has something to do. It's very anecdotal, and I don't want to make too much importance about it. But what happened while I was reading it with all this fantastic modulation, this tragic music, which reveals a Mozart of a great deepness, I almost tried to try, because I felt that Mozart, you know, had understood all the tragedy of the world. And I was at this time, the tragedy that we were aware is was a tragedy of Vietnam. These bombing, these thousands of people killed, this napalm. So, and I had the impression, the very deep impression, that this musician understood what was happening years after. And that the music was so much transcendence that it's translated all this tragedy of all the times.
Tremblay is an engaged artist, and so it's tempting to read an ecological message into a recent large work for orchestra titled Les Pierres Criant. But he discourages any attempt to read a political message into his music.
Les Pierres Criant. It's a quotation from Luke in the Gospel. Les Pierres Criant. Arsha will translate that. The stones will shout or will scream. This image is striking, not only with its force, because it's strength, but for me by its actuality. And I understood that these two words together, the scream of the stones, is made for our times. You can interpret it in many ways. The earth is in bad shape ecologically, and now we are in the process of a war, which is the complete absurdity. In other way, it's a strong assertion towards truth and life that even the stone can tell.
How does that connection between the feeling and the doing work for you?
That's a very good question, but it's very hard to answer, because I think the things there are links, but it's different. Like said Cage, if I want to make politics, I write a text and I make a speech. When you make music, I think that this kind of thing should be avoided. This of mixture should be avoided. I don't believe. I just believe the best music possible, most poetical music possible. But as soon as you want to put words and intention, it becomes for me terribly weak. I'm kind of allergic to this. But in my life, it's not because I don't believe that. I think there's a kind of decadence. When music begins to have some intention for politics or to prove anything, I think it's no more music. The language of music is not the language of the words.
Of Gilles Tremblay's music is complex. His scores are graphic, meandering squiggles, triangles, and blocks of notes in boxes, dense with annotations. The structure and shape of a work are givens, but events unfold in unpredictable ways. Tremblay says that the fewer decisions the composer makes, the more beautiful and unpredictable the music. It's an expression of that sense of wonder that continues to drive him to compose. At the age of 70, he's still exploring new ground. He's composing a work for a special piano tuned in microtones. Where this new direction will take him is unforeseeable. Gilles Tremblay wouldn't have it any other way.
It's an adventure. It's for me, it's an adventure, because what is interesting is the non-previsible. There is a small sentence of Boulez: "Il n'y a de création que dans l'imprévisible devenant nécessité." Let's try to translate that. There is creation only in the non-previsible becoming a necessity. Tomorrow, I may die in 25 years, but musically, I think we are at the beginning of something, and that I will not have the time to do to go as far as maybe I could go. Maybe I didn't go fast enough to go further. But I often think to death. Not with sorrow or regret mood at all. I have the intuition that that is a fantastic mutation. It could be very inspiring and full of life.
Thank you.
We just heard the Groundswell Radio's series called Canadian Music 101. And these portraits were commissioned by the Centre Discs label for a series called the Canadian Composer Portraits. They were all produced by Etienne Cornfield. Well, that's about it for this week for the show. You're listening to Groundswell Radio on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. To find out what's going on at Groundswell, go to gswell.ca. And as always, if you have any requests, suggestions, or ideas for the show, drop me a note, info@gswell.ca. You can also call the office, 204-943-5770. Thanks for listening to Independent Radio on CKUW and to Groundswell Radio. I'm David Scott, and I'll be back next week with a bunch more new music.
Local voices since 1963. This is CQW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
Have you ever wondered what queer and trans representation in music looks like? Well, wonder no more, because Meg Punk is coming to you weekly. Tune in Tuesday nights from 7 p.m. till 8 with me, Megan, your transgender host, and dig into the world of queercore punk rock, queer trans-themed rock and roll, and a dive into the history of queer and trans representation in music. Meg Punk, because sharing queer and trans history is important, but more importantly, representation matters.
Some people think wetlands are wastelands. Actually, marshes and other wetlands are important ecosystems, home to an amazing diversity of wildlife. Without them, some species would disappear. We would suffer too, since wetlands help purify and control the levels of our water. Many of these fragile areas are being lost to development, so let's do what we can to protect wetlands. To learn more, visit hww.ca.